No, I mean, architecture is political. We gotta add that stuff.
Indeed.
We're tearing down communities to build multifamily, and you have to understand we are creating displacement. You're displacing Black and brown folks, and they don't come back.
Half of this podcast would be dedicated to the history of Tyler House, my journey and my discoveries, and hey, I'm gonna solve this housing problem.
Hey guys, what's up? My name is Melissa Daniels. This is the Architecture is Political podcast where Black and brown folks talk about architecture. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and be part of my storytelling.
Can you believe this episode started from a tweet?
Yes, of course. It started from a tweet.
So back in August of 2022, if you go on my website, my blog that I house, these episodes as well as other pertinent information, you actually will see the tweet. But this person, let me just read this tweet to you. Studies show high displacement of low-income residents in D.C., Arlington, Alexandria, but increased concentration of low-income residents in PG County and Montgomery County of displacement over last decade. Also finds more new housing correlates with less displacement. And then the person cited the source from Montgomery County Planning. And so I went in and I dug deep. So like this person said, DC, Arlington, and Alexandria have high levels of displacement. However, in Montgomery and PG County, like I said before, high concentrations of low income residents seems to be the issue. New housing correlates with less displacement in these counties. So I wanted to investigate on this. So I posted, because I wanted to clarify this. I tweeted, focusing affordable housing construction only in neighborhoods where poverty is already concentrated exacerbates the problem. A better approach is to balance affordable housing across the county to facilitate equitable access to resources. And so then somebody tweeted, the data is showing the opposite of what you said. And then I responded, this is literally a quote from the research. So again, I posted the tweet that happened back in August about this. I contacted the person who did the research, and it wasn't that person, but someone from the county contacted me, and we went back and forth and we discussed, and lo and behold, they agreed to come on the podcast and just talk about their research. This was last year. What took so long is I am implementing more video content. So if you want to see some snippets of our conversation, please go and visit archispoly.online. That's archispoly.online. And just click on the episode link, and then you can be able to view some clips of it, as well as if you want to listen to the podcast. They were gracious enough again to have this conversation with me and just you know, clarify some things that I had some questions about, and they answered them. So I hope you guys get the information that you need, because I sure did. And I didn't want to spread misinformation. I know that this area, and I'm only familiar with the area I'm in, the area that I grew up in, as well as the surrounding areas. So I can't speak for the rest of the country. I just know that in DC, displacement is a huge problem when it comes to low-income residents, and as well as Arlington and Alexandria, which I didn't know. I learned something about Montgomery County and how each area, again, is different and has its different issues, even though they're like, is this invisible line that divides us? But it's amazing how governing and different policies and so forth, as well as area mass. I mean, Montgomery County is pretty big, and D.C. has a more dense population. And I can't explain Arlington. I can't explain Alexandria either. Fairfax is a whole different confusion in itself. There's Fairfax County, then there's Fairfax City, and then there's, you know, there's just other things. But anyway, right now we're talking about Montgomery County. So again, I hope you guys learned something from this. I know I did. And don't forget to go on my website, archispoly.online, to see some visuals, if you will. And also I'll post 2 out of the 3 on Instagram, and my Instagram name is also Arc is Polly, as well as Twitter. I'm gonna post on Twitter too and see. So yeah, hope you guys enjoy. Thanks.
Introduce yourselves just so that the audience can familiarize your voice with the name and who's talking.
I'm Casey Anderson. I'm the chair of the Montgomery County Planning Board.
I'm Tanya Stern, Deputy Planning Director at the Montgomery County Planning Department, and also wanted to mention I'm a third-generation Native Washingtonian.
And I'm Ben Kraft, and I'm what we call here a research planner, and I focus mainly on economic development, employment, housing, and equity issues. With the help of my colleagues, I conducted this research.
This is a bipartisan research, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm appointed by the Montgomery County Council. And these folks are professional staff for the planning department.
How did I get connected? There was a Twitter post that Montgomery County had put out. And I think, Ben, you were in the website that was associated with the tweet. And that sparked my interest as a Washingtonian born and raised in D.C. And my topic is displacement. I got super excited about this research. Just a little backstory. I am product of urban renewal. As a kid, I thought architecture would solve my problem and everyone else's problem. That was not the case in going to school, architecture school. And as I questioned my profession, I realized that maybe I should do something about that, and hence how this podcast was formed. According to this research, Montgomery County poverty is the catalyst versus displacement, which surprised me. Talk about the background of what you found about the research.
Sure. So maybe the best place to start is if I just give a quick overview of how the study came about and some of the methodology, and that will, I think, help understand that, yes, I think what you're saying is right, that what we found is a more significant problem in Montgomery County than displacement is actually the concentration of low-income people in neighborhoods. This study really came from the University of Minnesota, which had developed the methodology back in 2019. They released a national study of this, and Casey had seen it. And he more than a few times suggested that it was probably something worth us doing and updating here, because we had been struggling with some of these questions, and just to kind of take a deep look in Montgomery County to see where is displacement, where is poverty concentration, where are we seeing this happening. So really, I basically replicated their methodology with some updated data, and we added the dimensions of race and ethnicity and housing. And so I'll just give a quick kind of as quick as I can in non-visual terms, overview of how the methodology works. And really what its main input is census data. And it looks at changes in the socioeconomic characteristics of the housing stock and the housing stock changes in census tracts across the DC metro area between 2000 and 2019. And the census tracts in this case represent the neighborhoods, even though they're not, you know, perfect approximations of neighborhoods, but they're the closest thing we can get where we can see this kind of data in detail and in a reliable way. The core neighborhood change metric, where we get this story of, you know, is displacement happening versus low income concentration, or on the other hand, inclusive growth, is it's just the way that high income and low income populations change relative to each other in a neighborhood. So it can be a little bit tricky to visualize, but somebody, if they're listening later, can actually go on our website. We have a few graphics that encapsulate it pretty nicely, but you can really think about the way neighborhood change, the four categories of neighborhood change, as kind of like a grid with four cells. They're each representing one of the possible combinations that high and low income populations within a neighborhood can be changing relative to each other. So like on the top left, the way we've kind of laid it out, you could have low-income people and high-income people both increasing in the neighborhood, both increasing their populations within a neighborhood, meaning that there's, you know, everybody's coming into this neighborhood, and this is what we want. This is called inclusive growth. On the other hand, if you kind of move over to the right, the next cell to the right on this grid, you would have high-income populations increasing, but low-income populations decreasing. So in other words, you'd have high-income people replacing low-income people, and that is displacement. Then if you kind of go diagonally down to the bottom left, that is where you have the opposite of displacement, which is low-income concentration, and that is where you have the low-income population actually replacing the high-income population. And, you know, so the tract, the neighborhood or tract isn't necessarily shrinking, but it is getting poorer. And that's what leads to disinvestment. And then finally, at the bottom right, you have both populations shrinking at the same time. And that, so you're going to get a net population loss. And that's what we call abandonment under this framework. And that actually is not something that happens really at all in the DC area. Over this time period, the DC region has been economically vibrant enough that all of our neighborhoods are growing, regardless of their internal dynamics. So that's more of a phenomenon that you'll see in the industrial Midwest or in the rural South, where the populations are emptying out. Lastly, just that there are thresholds to the level of population change that need to be kind of hit within these neighborhoods to qualify in as one of these neighborhood change categories. And I'm not going to go into them here, but again, they're on the website. We have a chart there so people can see exactly what you have to get to. Most neighborhoods actually don't meet the criteria and don't fall into one of these categories. In other words, like the neighborhood change is the exception and the rule is actually neighborhood stasis. So, you know, that is to say that wealthy neighborhoods generally stay wealthy and poor neighborhoods generally stay poor. Again, reiterate that this is methodology developed mainly by the University of Minnesota. What our study here adds is race and ethnicity data and housing changes to go along with the actual neighborhood change categories to see how these are correlated. And all of this is available on the data, the actual code to, you know, to run, you can kind of run this and make tweaks to it. So it's open source. It's all on the website and then on a public data repository.
I would just add to that, I think that the terms gentrification displacement can be used in a lot of different ways. One of the things we're trying to do here is to define those to the extent that we could in a way that was precise and could be measured. But we didn't really use the word gentrification because that really could mean a lot of things. It's very hard to pin down. Displacement is a little bit easier, but it also can have different meanings. And I think that, you know, it's important to keep in mind that people can be displaced from their homes for a lot of different reasons. You could have a natural disaster. Your house could burn down. Your house could be, or your apartment building could be redeveloped, which is, I think, what happened in your case. You could, but the particular kind of displacement we're talking about here is primarily economic displacement that happens where there's no room economically or physically for people who can no longer afford to live there because prices are going up. Now, I think the findings are relevant even to those other kinds of displacement because no matter how you might be displaced from your home or your apartment, the ability to stay in your neighborhood depends on the availability of housing that you find suitable for your needs that you can afford. So even if your house burns to the ground and that's how you were displaced, these findings in some ways are still on point because then the question is, well, can I find some other place to live in this neighborhood that I can, that's economically accessible to me? I just want to be clear. We're trying to be precise here because we're trying to understand what it is we're talking about, because a lot of these conversations, people sort of have something particular in mind, and it may be different than what the person who's listening has in mind. It's hard to have a discussion where everybody is kind of on the same page about what we're talking about.
What I'll do is, if you go on the website, I'll have images, as well as I'll try to post some of these things on social media. What you're looking at is a map of Montgomery County, and it illustrates the low income concentration, inclusive growth, and displacement, as well as a white area that says does not meet criteria. A large area within Montgomery County does not meet the criteria. You're saying when it doesn't meet the criteria, it means that it's stagnant. Nothing has changed in that area, correct?
Or at least it hasn't changed very much. Not enough to really be significant under the criteria that was developed by the University of Minnesota.
The areas that are highlighted the most is the low income concentration, followed by displacement, and then inclusive growth.
What you see is different jurisdictions have sort of different proportions. So Montgomery County has a few more census tracts experiencing concentration of low-income residents than experiencing displacement, but it's pretty close. Whereas DC or Arlington have a lot more census tracts that, you know, you see a lot more blue for displacement than you see red for concentration of poverty. All the jurisdictions have a relatively small number of green, which are good. And that's one of the reasons that's so interesting, is what is it that distinguishes those places where lower income people can move in, higher income people can move in, and everybody wants to move in because they want to live together in the same neighborhood. That's what we think is kind of the optimal situation. We'd like to understand how could we replicate that in more neighborhoods, because that's kind of the ideal.
Just to reiterate for the audience, displacement is a significant, I'm going to say, problem in DC, Arlington, and Alexandria, and that the changing characteristics of a neighborhood is due to rapid growth that affects existing residents. Redevelopment does not mean replacing of affordable housing with luxury housing. Those statements are accurate?
Yes. And okay. I think that last one maybe bears some explanation, because I think a lot of people perceive that there's a lot of development going on. What that means is older affordable housing is being torn down and replaced with luxury units that the previous residents can't afford to live there anymore. What we found is in neighborhoods like Bethesda, there have been over 1,800 housing units built in Bethesda since 2016. Only 14 units have been demolished to make way for redevelopment. So 1,841 units built, 14 demolished. And of those 14, they're not income restricted units in the first place. So the idea that there's a lot of affordable housing units torn down, that just turns out not to really be true. The other thing about Bethesda is we have a moderately priced dwelling unit program, inclusionary zoning in Montgomery County. So with the 1,841 units came 270 moderately priced dwelling units that are income restricted over the long term. So that means we got almost 20 times as many new affordable income restricted units as the total number of housing units that were demolished. So I think that that kind of gives you a little bit of insight into what is going on when you see a lot of redevelopment. Yes, there's a handful of properties that have to get demolished for redevelopment. And obviously, if you live in one of those properties and you don't make a lot of money, that's, you have good reason to be concerned. But in terms of making space available for people at all income levels, redevelopment can, and in Montgomery County at least, does generate a lot more affordable units than it results in the demolition of older units, which may or may not be affordable, may or may not have any income restrictions tied to them.
I just wanted to add, within our NPDU program in Montgomery County, the minimum is 12.5% affordable units for new developments that build more than 20 units. But in high opportunity, higher income areas such as Bethesda, the minimum requirement is 15%. And so the county does recognize that we want to make sure that those parts of the county that is seeing a lot of market rate housing development is not only providing affordable units along with that, but even more affordable units relative to other parts of the county, so that those residents have the opportunity to live in downtown Bethesda, you know, in other parts of the county that is seeing a lot of this newer development.
I just want to make the audience aware of Montgomery County geographically. How would you describe Montgomery County to someone who is not familiar with the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area?
Sure, I can answer that. So Montgomery County is just north of Washington, D.C. It shares the border of D.C. along with Prince George's County, which is to its east. And then to its west is the Potomac River. And then on the other side is Northern Virginia.
I live in Howard County and I work in Anne Arundel County. And these three counties are, how should I say this? It's up there with income as one of the affluent counties in the area. When I think of Montgomery County, I think of, like you mentioned, Bethesda. I think of Chevy Chase. I think of Germantown. I also think of the wealth of the first two. Germantown is kind of, it's further out there. My perspective, and again, it's a perspective. There's no hard facts, and you can correct me, obviously. But Germantown is, I don't know, it's kind of
is newly developed. Growing up, it was like farmland at one point, but it's been developing very rapidly. But again, Montgomery County is an affluent county, and I don't think of displacement in the county more than I think of how do I even afford to even live in Montgomery County. So I feel like the numbers that you mentioned, the 12% and the 15% would be on par for a community like that. What type of programs do you have, either county or state programs that assist developers with programs for the displacement numbers or even with the low income numbers?
Well, certainly the moderately priced dwelling unit or MPDU program is a key program that Montgomery County uses to make sure that we continue to gain affordable housing units. So these, you know, they do have income restrictions. In addition, the county has a housing initiative fund that provides funding for developers to provide affordable housing. There's also another fund that helps to pay for loans for acquisition of existing units so that they could be maintained as affordable. And so Montgomery County certainly is between its inclusionary zoning program and actually providing funding to help support nonprofit and for-profit developers, that those are key initiatives. In addition, Montgomery County's Housing Opportunities Commission, that's our local housing authority, has been playing a major role in doing joint projects with developers in order to redevelop properties and to gain an additional number of affordable units relative to the units that existed before. There's some really great projects in Chevy Chase Lake, as well as Elizabeth Square and downtown Silver Spring, where that's happening. And so again, I think as Casey noted earlier, even when there has been demolition of existing buildings, the projects that we are seeing are actually adding more affordable units so that we're able to be able to serve, you know, even more residents in that way.
Do you have a definition of what an affordable unit is, or do you just go by whatever the federal guidelines is defined?
Our inclusionary zoning program defines, you know, requires these moderately priced dwelling units to be affordable at 60 to 80% of area median income. So in Montgomery County, for a family of four, that's a little over $100,000. So, you know, say 60 some thousand dollars to 80 some thousand dollars for a family of four would be considered affordable. That's not to say that that's suitable for everybody. If you make 30% of AMI, that's not going to be sufficient. But even the units that get produced at 60% of AMI, that allows affordable housing providers and sometimes the government to come in and buy down the subsidy even further. So it reduces the how much money is necessary to buy down the rent to be affordable. So instead of buying it down from 100% or 120% of AMI, if you're buying it down from 60 to 80% down to 30, you have the money that's available for subsidies goes farther. And then, of course, you also have other, you know, low-income tax credit, other affordable housing programs that target specifically people at even lower income levels. We have those as well. But I want to also emphasize that part of what's, I think, working here is not just that we're producing a lot of affordable units at those lower price points. We're also producing market rate housing that's reducing competition between more affluent people and lower income people. So if you moved into downtown Silver Spring in the last 20 years, you could find new, quote unquote, luxury apartments. You could find sort of class B, more middle class type apartments. You could find subsidized lower income or low to middle income units that are available as well. And there's enough space that there's not as much pressure in the market on the lower and middle income units to make room for people with more money as Silver Spring became more fashionable. So part of this is about creating directly more subsidized or income restricted units. And part of it's creating more housing in general that's reducing competition for the available physical and economic space.
Do you think sprawl or density has anything to do with your findings?
The places where displacement is occurring are not necessarily the urban center city or town centers, are not necessarily near metro. Like in Western Montgomery County, you see out near Poolsville, that's seeing displacement. That's a very rural area. But in some ways, it's not surprising because there's very restrictive zoning in that area. If you want to live on a big lot that overlooks farmland, you're going to have some competition. And that means that it's becoming relatively more expensive to live out there. On the other hand, downtown Silver Spring is seeing inclusive growth, even though lots and lots of people have decided they want to live in downtown Silver Spring. As I said a minute ago, we've more than kept up with new housing. And so you're seeing you don't have the kind of displacement pressures in downtown Silver Spring that you do in some other parts of the county or the region. I think the stereotype is that displacement is something that happens as these sort of more urban neighborhoods with transit and bars and restaurants and a lot of amenities become more attractive. That can happen, but it's not necessarily tied to urban, rural, suburban, and it can happen anywhere. And any type of neighborhood can also experience inclusive growth or, for that matter, concentration of low incomes.
And I will note, if you look at the map, notice that there are some green or inclusive growth neighborhoods on the outskirts, the fringes of the region. Probably some of those are what we would think of as, you know, sprawling kind of exurban developments. But in a sense, that kind of proves the rule of housing's role in creating inclusive growth. It just so happens that a lot of those places are really where the bulk of our housing has in the region's housing has been built in the last, let's say, 20 years because of the restrictive zoning rules and kind of general anti-development sentiments that we've had in the core of the region. So by virtue of having built the housing there, that's where there's less competition or is enough supply to absorb the demand. And that's where we may see some actual inclusive growth. The challenge regionally, though, is to prevent that because we know sprawl has a lot of other negative externalities about with traffic and the environment and climate change and all kinds of other social costs. So that's why it's very important to try to create the housing in the core areas of the region that can absorb that demand that is, it looks like, at least for in the relatively near future or near past, going out to the outskirts of the region. And then I'll just say, if you're looking, I just saw Reston pop up. That's a good example of a fairly new development, but it's also a planned community. It's fairly dense, especially for kind of like what we would, are based on our standards today for suburban development. And that's an inclusive growth tract. It's a place that's growing inclusively because it has seen a lot of fairly dense construction.
There's also a metro going out there too. Preston.
Yes, that too.
One thing I do appreciate about Montgomery County is that it's extremely diverse.
That's correct.
And it's become much more diverse in every way over the last 20 years.
Yes. Yes. In 2019, we completed a Montgomery County Trends Report. One of the things that we looked at was changes in the demographics of the county, racial, ethnic, income, household size. And we have a great map. It's not in front of you, but it basically shows that the study looks at data from 1990 and then 2019, and we do have some updated data from the 2020 census. And over that time, currently Montgomery County is over 59% people of color. But back in 90, I don't have the number right in front of me, but the white population was very much the majority in this county. But currently, I believe it's definitely under 50%. It's in the 40s at this point. And so over time, each sort of category, people of color, Black residents, Latino residents, Asian American residents, all those categories have grown while the percentage of the white population has decreased over that time. And so that is very much the present of Montgomery County as well as its future. It's very much a diverse county. I believe it is the most diverse county in the state of Maryland.
Does your study account for displacement of businesses?
No, it does not. It's really just people.
Okay. The purple line coming up and some of the concerns is displacement, especially when you have new transit areas. Will the people in the area be able to remain? So here there is displacement and over here is concentrated poverty. Do you have both low income and displacement at the same time?
Well, you can attract it for based on this methodology, it has to be one or the other. And that's what you're seeing here. But yes, you can definitely have them adjacent. You can have one what you're showing right now is a track that's seeing displacement right next to a track that is two tracks that are seeing low income concentration. Certainly there's different ways that if you were to aggregate tracts, you might get an entirely different result. And in a lot of cases, probably need to see something smaller than tract level to really get a good idea of, you know, for very specific areas of what's happening in that area.
I've always been concerned about the voices of a community, especially the Black and Brown community. What would you say to them when they see this data and hear that, oh no, displacement isn't a thing, it's more because you're poor and you should be fine in moving someplace else?
One thing to note regarding the Purple Line, the Montgomery County Planning Department is part of the Purple Line Corridor Coalition, which has put out a housing action plan to make sure that the residents who do live near the new Purple Line stations in both Montgomery and Prince George's County are able to stay in their communities, so that we can reduce the potential for displacement as that line gets completed and begins to operate. So I did want to mention that in the Housing Action Plan references, for instance, for Montgomery County, some of the programs that we already talked about in terms of, you know, preserving and building new affordable housing, there are additional programs as well. But I think the larger message is not, don't worry about displacement because your community could be characterized as low income concentration. We care about both. We want to make sure that if there is a potential threat for displacement, that we avoid moving in that direction or try to slow it down so that residents can stay. We want to make sure that residents do have the ability to move into what could be called high opportunity neighborhoods, so that they don't only have the option of staying in a neighborhood where there is, for instance, a concentration of low-income residents. So I would say we wouldn't tell those residents, don't worry about it. We would say we are concerned about these as well. And what we're doing is trying to keep our eyes on both of them so that we ultimately, what we want to do is provide our residents with more options so that, number one, they can stay in Montgomery County so that they can afford to live in Montgomery County, but also have the ability to move into neighborhoods that have other amenities to be able to gain new amenities in the communities where they are right now.
Is there a website or something regarding programs for them?
I can send you the link to the Purple Line Corridor Coalition's Housing Action Plan.
NIMBYs come out and say, I don't want affordable housing in my neighborhood, or my property value will go down. How do you guys combat that? Because again, like, you want to build more housing to create an inclusive Montgomery County. How do you combat with stuff like that? Pass the potato. Who wants this question?
I think the main takeaway for the study is that we should be more concerned about making sure there's enough housing as the first building block.
Right.
I think a lot of people's instinct is to say, let's not have any more development here because that'll cause displacement. I think one of the big takeaways of the study, that's kind of the opposite of what we should be. That tends to be counterproductive. But I think that it is important to have programs that directly subsidize rents, because just market rate housing won't solve the problem. Probably won't make it worse, but it's not enough to solve the problem. So we do need subsidies. We do need inclusionary zoning.
Something else that we often hear in Montgomery County is the concern about job growth. And, you know, so the housing issue tends to come up in those conversations as well, where we may have residents who are opposed to not just affordable housing, but just any new housing in their communities. But at the same time, we hear calls for, you know, how can we improve job growth in Montgomery County? And one of the things that we point out is that you can't have one without the other. If you want more job growth, you have to have more housing. You have to build housing that these workers, that these companies that we want to attract will be able to afford to live in. Those units are not all going to be, you know, luxury units, because we want a wide variety within the workforce. And these companies will be hiring people at different income levels. So you have to have housing that's either subsidized affordable housing, market rate affordable housing, more expensive market rate housing. You have to provide the wide spectrum of housing choices at different price points in order to support a growth in our economic base. The two have to work hand in hand. You know, I have been in meetings where I've heard people say, I don't want more housing, but we need more jobs, we need more businesses. And it's like, well, if you want one, you have to have the other. They work hand in hand.
The frequently asked questions, just some basics I forgot to ask. What policies are under development thanks to these findings and their impact?
Well, we're looking at different neighborhoods all the time. So we're doing a plan right now for Fairland Briggs Cheney, which is a couple neighborhoods off of Route 29, sort of, on the way to Howard County. You're probably familiar with that area. If you drive from Howard down to Silver Spring, you go, through it. And that's a neighborhood where a lot of people in the neighborhood and a lot of the planners are very concerned about what's the impact of new development going to be on lower income people, because as you can see from a map, that's a place that has seen declining number of upper middle income people, increasing number of low income people. And I think the insight here is this is not a place where the problem is displacement. In fact, it's the opposite. The problem is that people who have the means to make other choices are going somewhere else. And so that suggests that when we're planning for Fairland Briggs Cheney, maybe we should be a little more focused on how to make this neighborhood attractive to people of all income levels, as opposed to being more concerned about the possibility that new development is going to displace people. That's not to say that the low income people don't have every reason to be concerned. I mean, the rent is too damn high. That's true almost everywhere in the DC region. But adding more housing in Fairland Briggs Cheney is something we should be probably trying to encourage, because right now there's not a lot of stuff getting built there. And the neighborhood is in some ways showing some troubling signs of economic change that's going in the wrong direction. So that suggests maybe better transit. The flash service with bus rapid transit is a good first step. More amenities, better recreation facilities, schools, parks, whatever it is. Some of those things might be missing, and that might be the direction we'd go, as opposed to recommending restrictive zoning. On the other hand, recommending accommodating zoning is probably not going to do much by itself, because if you see a place where there's not a lot of investment going on right now, just upzoning isn't going to really do much of anything. We have to look at what are the issues in this neighborhood that are causing people at higher income levels to move out, try to address those so this can continue to be socioeconomically as well as racially and ethnically diverse part of the county. We think that's good for everybody. And that should be driving our approach to planning in individual neighborhoods and not assumptions about the direction of change at a level of the entire region or the entire county.
Is this part of your Thrive 2050? Or that's something different?
It ties into Thrive. Yeah, that's a great question. We mentioned it only briefly in one of the updated chapters to Thrive that we just sent to the county council, because this research was just completed by Ben just in the last few months. But it does connect to some of the ideas in Thrive, because it points out that this problem of concentration of poverty is maybe at least as serious as the problem of displacement. And that's something that I think a lot of people overlook. And it leads people down the wrong path when they're thinking about, where does the county need to go in the future? We want to acknowledge very clearly that displacement is a problem. It's a big problem. It's a very serious problem for a lot of people and a lot of neighborhoods. But trying to reverse the downward trajectory of neighborhoods that are going the other direction is also a very serious problem. And in fact, a lot more lower income people and quite a few more people of color are exposed to those conditions than are facing displacement. So we need to address both those things with a different set of solutions. And that's part of what Thrive is arguing.
I think not doing anything and just leaving places as they are is probably going to perpetuate both of those problems. If we consider low income concentration and displacement both problems, and I think they are, and I think they're really just two sides of the same coin. In either case, you have a certain set of people kind of leaving a place and being replaced by another set of people. And I think that one of the main takeaways from this is that building things, building housing, adding infrastructure and amenities in both situations is one of the key ways to solve either one of those problems. And really, it's not even actually that different, in a sense that if you build more housing in both places, if you build more housing in a place that's seeing displacement, you're going to add more opportunities for people to stay there and new people to come in. Whereas if you build more housing along with amenities, you're going in low income concentration places, you're going to allow more people of diverse backgrounds to come in and hopefully get more grocery stores and more local serving businesses that in places that are seeing poverty concentration tend to empty out from and not come back to. I think that's one of the main points of Thrive is to encourage that kind of growth in key important places, corridors and nodes in the county.
No place should be stagnant. Change is inevitable. Build something new in an area and create more housing, definitely. You guys have a population that, you know, DC folks may want to move up, or Virginia Post may want to go across the river. Definitely there should be options. And again, Montgomery County is unique in the fact that it's extremely diverse. County should be very proud of that. Maryland is proud of that. So any last words before we wrap up?
Well, yeah, speaking of not being able to say it better ourselves, I mean, we think we are proud of our diversity. We want to keep it that way and build on it. And that's, I think, what this research is about, is trying to make sure that we can find a way to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners. I have an exciting announcement. I decided to launch a membership program for the show, where you have a chance to support me and the show directly. I love creating the show, and it means the world to me that you all tune in to keep hearing me week after week. But it takes an immense amount of time and energy to produce. I want to keep the show going, and I want to invest in its growth. And I also want you to become a partner with me in this journey. That's why I'm excited to give you a chance to officially become a supporter of the show at glow.fm/archispolly, archispolly, or by clicking the link in the show notes. It's quick and easy. It takes less than 30 seconds. And just takes clicking a link in the show notes and using Apple or Google Pay. You don't have to create any new logins, and you can contribute as much or as little as you like. If this show is part of your day or week, and you like what I'm doing, then visit glow.fm/archispolly, all one word, and support me and the show in any way you can today.